And the Oscar goes to Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting.
Robin Williams has previously been nominated 3 times. This is his first Academy Award.
Oh, man. This might be the one time I'm speechless. Oh, thank you so much for this incredible honor. Thank you for putting me in a category with these 4 extraordinary men. Thank you, Ben and Matt. I still want to see some ID. Thank you, Gus Van Sant, for being so subtle you're almost subliminal. I want to thank the cast and crew, especially the people of South Boston. You're a can of corn. You're the best. I want to thank the Mishpucha Weinstein, Mazel Tov. I want to thank Marcia for being the woman who lights my soul on fire every morning. God bless you. And most of all, I want to thank my father up there, the man who... When I said I wanted to be an actor, he said, wonderful, just have a backup profession like welding. Thank you. God bless you.
That gets me really choked up, just listening to that.
Yeah. Obviously, a lot has been said in the last few days about the great Robin Williams. You and I found out together.
Yeah.
We were in the car driving back from Tom Arnold's house doing a podcast with him.
Yeah.
And you just get that text and you look down and you don't believe it. And it doesn't resonate. It does. Even reading the headlines and reading people say RIP Robin Williams, you're like, well, that can't be right. That can't be true.
Yeah, well, you just wonder why people that bring so much joy to billions of people through their body of work, you know, the charity stuff he did, his comedy overseas,
comic relief,
not only just comedy, but like
USO.
I mean, touching people with his not just comedy, but his dramatic work and just who he is. I mean, it's like people. I can't tell you like down days I would have where I would just YouTube a Robin Williams talk show appearance. Or watch
right.
Mrs. Doubtfire is my favorite movie, which I've talked about because, you know, it came out right when I think a week after my folks split, and I was in such a weird time of like not knowing how to process it or what it really meant. I hadn't even like talked about it with anybody. I hadn't been any sort of counseling or, you know, talk about it with your friends of that age. They're more concerned about like, you know, where we're going to get fruit by the foot, not not why your parents aren't together. But
sure.
That film, like, addressed it and then like wrapped it up into kind of a, it was the first time where I was at my friend's birthday party when I saw it and I cried in the theater, and then at the end like felt kind of like it kind of wrapped it up in a way for me. And that's like, that was my first real taste of like, I mean, I was 9 years old being like, man, this Robin Williams guy is the best. And it also, it's a reason
genius.
I got into comedy. It's a reason I got into acting, because people have always said, what kind of a career do you want? I was like, Robin Williams. I want to be able
because
to.
Because the range.
Yeah.
You saw him do things like Mrs. Doubtfire. Well, and I mean, not to bring it all back to that movie, but you pretty much can. In that movie, he's so funny, so silly, so dorky, but at the same time, able to talk to a kid, a 9-year-old Adam Ray, who's just gone through a divorce, and let him know that it's going to be okay. And you see stuff like Dead Poets Society and Good Will Hunting, for which he won that Oscar that we played the speech for.
Hook. I mean,
and then
Jumanji,
Hook.
Good Morning Vietnam, Patch Adams, Insomnia, Death
yeah.
to Smoochie is like so
underrated. Death to Smoochie is hilarious. He had that career that touched everyone in some way, shape, or form. You look back through however old you are. And he did something. You talked about Good Morning Vietnam. I did. It was my job in high school to do the morning announcements.
I did. Me too. Have we talked about that?
I don't know.
That?
But that's kind
of
cool.
If we can find old tapes of both of us
to play
the podcast,
that'd be nuts. But I went to Sunny Hills High School, and me and my buddy Ozzy we loved Good Morning Vietnam. So when the announcements came on and the light went up, we would go, "Good morning, Sunny Hills."
And two teachers got it.
Yeah, two teachers were like, "That's the best thing I've ever heard."
these kids
are like, why is he yelling at
that
us?
That C quickly turned to an A.
Yeah, exactly. But Robin's just the kind of guy where, like you say, when he was on a talk show, when he got an award, when he was on a red carpet, you just knew.
Yeah.
You just knew it was going to be good. The interactions, you and I have been lucky enough to meet the man.
Man.
And both, I mean.
Tell us. I'm going to tell a story. You tell your story.
Yeah. Like, I got to do a show in San Francisco, where Robin lives, at a place called the Throckmorton Theater. I'm doing it with Jeff Keith and a couple of the guys. I get off stage, Robin's there, and I didn't know he was there, but he was there in the back, he was watching, I did my act, I got off stage, Robin walks up to me, I've never met him before, and he just goes, "Oh my God, Mr. Williams, you're like Prozac with a head." And I laugh, and I go, "Robin freaking Williams just called me Prozac with a head." And if you read my bio, it's on there.
Yeah, that quote will never escape you.
Yeah,
you
it's Rob
that all the time.
It's Robin Williams called him Prozac with a head. That's in my bio.
And how just like he, I don't even think, because you hear about these moments all the time where he would, you know, stop for a picture, or the Norm Macdonald story of of him just, you know, before Norm was about to go on Letterman, and him, you know, coming in and grabbing the phone from Norm and talking to his friend and doing this whole thing like he was complaining about his order at a Chinese restaurant. It's like he gave these moments to people, not because he knew, like, they're going to love a Robin Williams moment, because he was that, like, selfless and that that much of a amazing human being to want to connect with just people on all levels. And I think that's why it translated so much on screen.
Yeah.
And, like, when I met him, it was at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, and I was doing improv, and there was a thing called the Monday Night Jam where all the students could go to the show, and then, like, they would basically have a few big dogs from the company on stage that you got to improvise with, and then they would just, you raise your hand, and if you got picked, you got to be on stage for a half hour and improvise. And Robin Williams popped in that night.
Holy
and I'm on
shit.
Stage, and I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, this is my idol. I'm on stage with him. I'm going to get a chance to improvise with him possibly. At one point, I'm just standing in the back watching most of these scenes. I'm like literally out of body experience. Then he steps forward to start a scene. He just starts doing a gibberish, like a very passionate gibberish speech where he's like, and I'm like, all right, somebody should obviously step in and be like his interpreter, his English interpreter.
Right.
Because
he's
clearly being that part of the scene.
Sure.
So I feel myself, my body just move forward. It was almost somebody just pushed me from the back and I just like fling forward.
God, you have the courage to do that, to see Robin Williams on stage. You go,
and
yes,
I
belong
look
up there.
Over at me and he finishes a gibberish speech and then he turns to me as like somebody would to be like interpreter.
Right.
And then I just started saying stuff. I don't remember anything I said. I remember I said something at one point about like, I wish like avocado wasn't so expensive at Subway or something, some sort of like thing like that to where something short after, because one of his last ones, he went on a long, like 45-second gibberish rant
and
where I was
just
like,
end it with, sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's like,
yeah, it's a classic joke. It's
and,
great.
And then I remember we walked to the back of the stage and he comes over and he puts his arm around me like a half hug and kind of squeezed my shoulder and just had that big Robin Williams like warm smile that just like made you feel like a million bucks and that you've seen so many times on TV and in movies and he kind of just he goes, "So funny, man, so funny."
Oh,
and I
geez.
Literally go, "I don't know what just happened, but you're the fucking best." And he gave a little Robin Williams laugh and then he squeezed my shoulder again and then like I, you know, that was
that. That's your life.
And dude, I was just like, the fact I couldn't have, even if I had just been in the audience watching that night, I would have still never forgotten that night. But the fact that he looked at me and said, it's not even about him complimenting me about, you know, it's not like that made me go, "I am funny. I'm going to keep doing this." It was just that like, I got to meet the guy who I just, you know, has made me feel so much, and made me, on a weird level, like it made me go, I want to be in this profession that so many would probably choose not to if they knew what it really required and did to you emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, you know, there's countless stories like that we've been seeing people posting on Facebook or interviews coming out and a lot of sort of his friends, and which is why it's so just crazy to think that there was so much pain going on in him that he didn't want to be around anymore.
Yeah. It's mind boggling that someone that brought that much joy to that many in that level. And you saw it just in being at the clubs the last few nights. We're recording this on a Wednesday, 2 days afterward. The general consensus of all the comics, like, there's no comic that was like trying to be that asshole, trying to be like the one that does like the first joke, or like, you know, it affected all of us.
Yeah.
It all put us in that mood where we're like, holy God, Robin Williams. And because we all respected him, we all loved him. He had a moment for all of us. And
that's why it's so tough too, man, because it's like, God, he must have known how much we all loved him, and to know that he didn't love himself, I guess, to a certain extent, to want to to do that is what like is so like tough to swallow, because it's like, fuck, man, like
he's the top of the game. You
like,
can't.
But how does somebody that who's right. who like not? I'm sure he did not realize, you know, his effect on people, but you know, like we you know, Dr. Drew was telling us, which, you know, in just a couple minutes, we're going to play a 30-minute interview we did with Dr. Drew Pinsky, who gave us a lot of
really good insight.
You know, clinical medical analysis on you know, what
depression, suicide, things.
Addiction, which was all the things he was struggling with. And it makes you realize that it was a bigger issue than just him not being happy. There was, you know, it's a disease, man. There's stuff biologically going on with him that wasn't treated and also not maybe treatable,
and stuff that you can't pretend to understand, and you can't say blanket statements like, you know, he was weak, or it was a selfish act, or anything like that. You can't, because you weren't in there, you weren't in that head, you weren't feeling those things.
Yeah.
You don't know. The only thing that we do know is that we all loved him, and the fact that he's, God, I can't believe I take the sentence, the fact that he's gone is heartbreaking, and we thank God that we got the body of work that we did, and thank God we got the time that we had.
No kidding, man.
Because...
So you gotta focus on that. Like, that's just...
It was something truly magical.
We got so many good years from him, so much stuff to look back on. I mean, you know, that being said, it's just the worst.
It is, and we implore that anyone out there who is or knows someone that's going through depression, that they don't treat it lightly, because look what it did to a man that, for everyone, we looked at him and thought this man had everything. And so if you or a friend is going through that, you don't have to do it by yourself. You can reach out and get help. And
so for a guy,
we implore you to.
For a guy that's happy, it's like he's still a human being. I think we put celebrities up on a pedestal that, like, it's Robin Williams. Look how much joy he's bringing. There's no way a guy like that's unhappy. And if it was, that he wouldn't have people in his circle to help him out.
Sure.
But there's just, you know, like Dr. Drew was telling us, and you'll hear, he's like, there's not so many people, you know, they looked at him and were like, oh, he seemed depressed, but he didn't seem suicidal. And there's a fine line of that, but you know, where you just got to really pay attention when you see the symptoms. But before we play the interview with Dr. Drew, which is really insightful and interesting and helps to shed some light on this that I think a lot of people are curious to hear and learn about, Brad and I, there's too many moments, sound bites, clips, movies to even, like, you know, bring up that we want to share that are some of our favorite Robin Williams moments, but we found
Here's a couple. Yeah.
Brad's is a clip from his stand-up, and mine is a clip from my favorite movie, Mrs. Doubtfire. So we're going to end this little portion of it playing these clips, and then and then enjoy a 30-minute interview with our friend Drew Pinsky.
Robin Williams, rest in peace. We love you.
Love you, man.
Can I help you, man?
Oh, sorry I'm late. But after all those scotches, I had to piss like a racehorse.
Daniel?
Yeah?
Why in God's name are you dressed like a woman?
Well,
like you to meet the host of your new show.
Host?
Euphigenia Doubtfire, dear. I specialize in the education and entertainment of children.
Surprise!
How drunk they get, they could wear a skirt and not care! And now they can invent a sport like golf! Here's my idea for a fucking sport. I knock a ball in a gopher hole.
Oh, you mean like pool?
Fuck off, pool! Not with a straight stick, with a little fucked up stick. I whack the ball that goes in a gopher hole.
Oh, you mean like croquet?
Fuck croquet! I put the hole hundreds of yards away!
Like a bowling thing.
Fuck no! Not straight, I put shit in the way. Like trees and bushes and high glass so you can lose your fucking ball and go whacking away with a fucking tire iron. Whacking away and each time you miss you feel like you're gonna have a stroke. Fuck, that's what we'll call it. A stroke, because every time you miss you feel like you're gonna fucking die. Oh, here's a bit of back. Oh, fuck, this is brilliant. Right near the end, I'll put a flat piece with a little flag to give you fucking hope. But then I'll put a pool and a sandbox to fuck with your ball again. Ah, you'll be there crashing your ass, jerking away in the sand.
Oh, you do this one time.
Fuck no. 18 fucking times.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Well, thanks for doing this. Obviously, yeah,
literally,
yeah, no kidding. Obviously, doing this under these circumstances sucks.
Yeah.
But when Rob Williams passed away, it was Brad. You know, we heard, and he got a text. You know, typical this day and age. Just, did you hear what happened? And we assumed it was something. Tragic, not that it's
like national tragedy, like some sort of
like maybe he got murdered. I didn't think that it like would it be the last thing I would have thought is that he did it to himself.
Did you know him personally?
I met him twice at comedy shows, mm-hmm. and had a small interaction with him. I got to improvise with him at the UCB theater.
Oh wow!
Once it was unbelievable. Yeah. And I'll never. I posted about the story because I was reading so many heartbreaking stories of people. That were making me sad, and I was like, you know, there's got to be a lot of positive interactions people
sure,
have.
Sure, the guy that much joy.
Well, I think actually most of the reporting and most of the stories that have been told have been very sensitive because mm-hmm. he literally was a body shot to everybody, which is kind of an unusual. Who knew that Robin Williams had that relationship with everybody?
Well,
in the
I mean, when you think about his career in terms of the range that he had, from the dorky, silly comedies to the most dramatic. Acting that you know, Oscar-winning performer, his range was insane. And when you think when you go through his IMDb page, it's just hit after hit, and not just hit cultural things,
right? But significant,
Dead Poets Society, you know, Good Will Hunting, and all that.
But for my kids, I mean, he was both the genie, and he was Peter Pan,
right.
You know what I mean? It's like,
Hook. Yeah.
Peter Pan.
Yeah.
And it was a very important guy to them.
And there's not too many people who have had careers that to be 30 plus years in TV and film and to be global and to have not that like everyone who's a fan loves every one of his movies, but he's got enough of a body of work that I mean, find one person who doesn't love something about him or wasn't touched by something that he did.
And you know, other than the what sort of broke my heart about the story, other than the pain he obviously was in,
mm-hmm.
was that a man with who has left this kind of legacy was like worried about his career and didn't feel good about it at the end and was worried about money and stuff. That just chokes me up.
That was a part of it? Is that
it was? I don't know how much it was a part of it, but as the stories are starting to come out now, there's more and more. I thought that would be
right
because people ask me, do you think the fact that his his television show got canceled. I'm like, are you kidding? That guy? Why would
yeah,
he give it?
Why would he care?
He probably did it as a favor to Pandora or something. Maybe yeah. Turns out needed the money. Didn't want to go on the road because he was depressed. Probably didn't want to go on the
road. Well, yeah, I heard some story about him being doing a movie in Alaska that he was by himself, and that's when he started drinking again. This was on the Mark Maron interview, you know, that he did. And
is that when he started talking about the drink?
Yeah,
see, I love Mark and his.
That interview is there hasn't been a more because I've been listening to so many. You know, all his talk show and his press junket interviews are so he's on Robin. This is the most raw you get to hear him, and he talks about being in Alaska, and he just got so alone and depressed. He was like, "Why am I up here doing this? Why am I doing this movie? It's a depressing movie." And that's when he started drinking. He started with small bottles of Jack Daniels, and then he goes, next thing you know, I'm hiding bottles.
Yeah.
And so I guess, you know, obviously we you're an expert in all
well,
this
that's
stuff.
That's the way it works. And that's how it goes.
And this is as comedians and living the you know we're you know in a lifestyle that he is had been also living. And I guess
No. You're going to blame the industry and the road?
Well, we're just asking if
factors. If those are obviously
I mean, they don't help, but he was a straight up alcoholic. Mackenzie Phillips yesterday told me they used to run together on the streets. You know, they did lots of drugs together just because they were young people in Hollywood. Going, what the hell's happening to us? And let's go do some drugs. You know, that's what drug addicts do. They do drugs.
Yeah.
And the alcohol really is what kicked in. It became his major thing. And he had 20 years of sobriety. He was an important person in sobriety. Mm-hmm. Helped lots of people.
Yeah.
And when people with two decades of sobriety slip, it's really hard to get them back.
Well, I mean, you saw it earlier this year with Philip Seymour Hoffman. I think he had like 20, 25 years.
But I blame his death on doctors and medication. He had Adderall in his room when he died. Mm-hmm. Somebody can we cuss on this thing?
Yeah, you can cuss.
Somebody gave him that fucking Adderall, and that's what triggered his whole thing. I'm convinced of it. Mm-hmm. And when people die, I will not be surprised if we hear about some pharmaceutical medicine.
Yeah, you were telling me that.
With Robin, because when people die related to addiction today,
right.
There's always an addictive pharmaceutical on board. Now, Robin had a very complicated situation,
sure.
So it may well not be that, but I wouldn't be shocked if we find that out.
So the addictive personality he's had from the get-go, you think, and he was always...
Oh, shit, you're born with that.
And then how much of the...
But then he had some sort of...
Depressive.
The depression fueled it. Most people start using because they have some kind of childhood trauma that makes them unregulated. They don't feel okay in their own skin. They have lots of shame. They just can't... Their sense of self is rocked all the time and fragmented. And so substances make them feel a lot better. And then when they have the kind of brain that really feels good, they're like, it's game on.
And he was such a big... cocaine user, that I mean, played a role in all of the ups and downs of.
Yeah, but you saturate your head with these chemicals for long periods of time, and you can have some chronic depressions. That the complex interplay between addiction and substance use. But I'll tell you what: you take a long term sober person, you put them in relapse, they are depressed and they are ashamed. That's always the case.
So he was that was really heavy at this point.
Oh, that's heavy for them. This guy was a really seriously recovering guy, and he had isolated himself from his sober peers, you know, and he just wasn't back in the game. And they don't want to go. Their disease doesn't let them back. They don't want to deal with the shame. They don't want to let go. The disease just doesn't want them to go back. And then he went back into Hazleton, right? And so we don't know where he's using or not using at that point. He was sort of probably in and out.
I think he described it, and who knows if it was a publicist thing, but as a preventative measure because he felt like he was going to sleep.
It's zero meaning.
Yeah, shut up, Brad.
No, that's what they said. And it is zero meaning.
Sure.
He went to rehab because he was struggling with his addiction. I don't know what stage he was struggling at. I don't know if the depression was threatening his recovery, but he needed some professional help, and he got it, and he didn't stick with it.
Now,
so it wasn't a Michael Jackson type thing where people weren't like he had so many yes men around him.
Nobody was stepping in.
I don't
think it's anything like that. But then all that's the background, right? But why the sudden rapid decline? Because everyone was caught off guard. It wasn't like he'd been kind of isolating systematically, and that's a bad thing for an alcoholic or a depressed person. Bad, bad, bad. But okay, you know, it doesn't mean they're going to kill themselves. Why this sudden deterioration?
Right, and that's something that we all are kind of questioning because you look at his life.
I want to hear the autopsy results.
So I
will tell you that, you know, the fact that he had chest surgery and has cardiac disease, that makes the depression sometimes a lot worse and sometimes a lot more unstable. I wonder if an autopsy they're going to find some medical problem that really destabilized his depression. That's what I think.
I mean,
really?
I spent 20 years working in a psychiatric hospital. My primary job was looking at the relationship between medical diseases, medical treatments, and depression. That was so often a problem. Like, you know, what medicine should they be off if we're going to treat their depression? Is the depression because of some underlying thing we haven't figured out yet, like a cancer or a tumor? And I'll tell you, it happened all the time. I can't tell you how often I put somebody up on a treadmill because they vaguely mentioned, yeah, I had some chest pain last week, and they came in with severe depression. Probably, goddamn, we weren't taking them off for chest surgery that afternoon. And sometimes the depression would get a lot better just treating their heart disease. Sometimes they would have some.
Do you think that's something
depression.
That a lot of people in the medical field and a lot of people don't know? Is that those things are related? And then
it's so axiomatic to us in medicine that I was shocked when I started talking about it and people asked me that question.
Yeah,
because it's just like a temperature. It's like this is routine
based
stuff
knowledge,
in medicine.
Yeah.
This is, and then I started thinking, oh my god, we are doing a terrible job as my profession in educating people about that, because everybody I talk to, I mean everybody, Brad, goes like, huh, what?
Yeah, and I had no idea. Yeah.
Oh. We got some work to do here, because
somebody who
need to be aware of that.
In your experience with people who commit suicide, how much? And I have four friends over the last 3 years who have done it.
Come on,
and
that's terrible.
One who was like about to be probably like the fifth head of Google. Like this kid was 29, just too smart for his own good. Finally got
is he
on.
Manic? Somebody bipolar will do that.
Probably a little bit of both. And what I found out from his sister is that he finally got on these meds that gave him like this strength, apparently, to like
steroids
to do it. Do it. He was so bummed that he couldn't even like.
What?
Now I feel good enough to do it.
That's an interesting phenomenon that does happen.
Wow.
So people literally can't get out of bed, can't muster the energy to go kill themselves, and you give them enough to feel better.
How
they go
fucked up.
Finally, I can go do this now.
But so what percentage of people are
that's
are
a rare just, thing. That's rare.
Right.
Rare.
But I mean, like how much of, I guess, with Robin, do you think it was like a 2 days of just so bad that he's like, all right, I'm doing it?
No, I think it was like 20 minutes.
No, I mean like. Oh, so
I literally
think of a switch flipped.
When people hang themselves, it is like boom! It comes on them fast and hard,
an overwhelming feeling,
just shattering misery.
And he's by himself.
My friend, old time psychiatrist I used to hang out with, told me, he goes, I think when people hang themselves, they're in a sudden psychotic state. Their thinking is completely distorted, and I know a number of patients who would say to me repeatedly, look, I have suicidal thinking, but my family, I would never, ever do that.
Family, friends, boom. Family, everything.
In that moment, that goes away.
Wow.
Or they feel like a burden to their family, or they can't think about
it. And there's nothing to possibly do. The brain
you
is just...
You sit on them. Here's what you do. Put them in a room where there's nothing they can hang on to or do to themselves.
Right, but if you're by
you
yourself...
sit on them
like
for 3 days, and then they're better.
Wow.
They get better. They just pass.
So you think
emotions
if he had been around people because he was by himself, maybe.
Let us not blame anybody.
No, yeah. I mean,
we're not
blaming.
It's just a reminder, don't isolate. Don't let people isolate that you're in the slightest bit concerned about anyone's pertains to mood and substance.
I think one thing that's sort of confusing everyone is it just seems like the guy has it all, and then depression is that powerful.
Not only has it all, but brought joy all the time and seemed to be experiencing joy in front of other people.
So many interviews, I feel like you see what you see is what you get. When you hear him talking, and even in this Marin interview, him talking about the good old days of like the Comedy Store and stuff, he sounds like he's genuinely
enjoying it, loving it.
So it's not like he wasn't experiencing. And I'm sure doing these movies, he had a great time.
But you guys get up on stage and you get that high. It's a little bit of a drug, right?
Yes.
And just like doing a drug, you get back off. And however you're feeling before.
I describe stand-up as a drug all the time.
Yeah,
that's why I think the nights I'm like, I'm going to take a night off. And then I'm like, I'm at least just going to go hang out at a club. I'm almost fidgeting in my chair. Like, I got to be around stand-up.
Yeah.
And then I got to get up. I got to talk. I mean,
And then you're around the audience. And the thing that I try to describe to people is that just like a drug, there is a
Brad actually does get high before.
Yeah, he does.
Sure.
I've seen you. You're
Flintstones vitamins. He snorts some.
Jacked on before. You can't even
obviously. I mean, I just have tanks of NyQuil on my back at all times.
Keebler cocaine cookies.
Yeah. soon to be released. But like the thing that I try to describe to people is the come down from stand up is real. Where you go on stage, you're the king. You have all these people laughing, and you're the man. And then show is done. You go back to a hotel room, and you're by yourself.
That's right.
That sucks.
What other
every
job
night.
Has
That's
that
right.
Every
that
night,
no other
high
job has that kind of high low. But a not depressed person would go, well, enjoy the highs.
Yeah.
Why do you have to focus on those lows? You know you're gonna have another one soon.
Totally.
So relax. But if you're depressive, what you feel is, oh shit, it's still here. Mm-hmm. I can't tolerate this.
I think there's also a pressure that finally got to him of needing to be Robin Williams all the time, that maybe you just get...
People keep talking about that. I don't know. That's a piece you'd have to know the man to really know. He seemed to like being on all the time. One-on-one, you're hearing with Marc Maron, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
But as soon as you get two people, it's an audience. It's game on.
And he seeked that out. And there's so many stories of him stopping by UCB, stopping by the Comedy Store. Even up in Mill Valley, there's the Throckmorton Theater. And he would stop by that theater and clubs up there. He loved being around comics. He had to do it.
But again, you're talking about it's really like talking about someone who suddenly got pneumonia and died, mm-hmm. and then going, "What the hell? They were 3 months ago. They were healthy." Well, yeah, they were better 3 months ago, and then they got this illness, got worse, and
gotcha.
It's the same phenomenon. Dick Cavett said it great. Dick Cavett goes, "Look, he goes, how could you have a successful TV show and have it all in relationships and whatever, and you're depressed? How's that possible?" He goes, "It's like asking me how could I have the flu." Mm-hmm. It's a brain disorder. It's a brain disease, and it's a medical condition. It's like anything else, and it affects a different organ than we're accustomed to thinking about. When people say things like, "Well, it's a sensitive topic," we're adding to stigma. It's bullshit. It's just brain, mm-hmm. just like your heart. Hearts get disorders too. And or we say, "Well, he's battling his demons." Please, that sounds like Theodoric of York.
You must have some middle-aged
barber going.
Good reference.
Drink two if you're playing at home.
Steve
Martin.
Starting to bust out a Grendel reference next. Good lord.
How many theories are you hearing about this as?
Not that many. Okay. And it's really pretty much what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. People. Is pretty much the conversation I've had everywhere.
Well, I mean, I guess that if there's anything that could be out of this that's good, is that people realize.
Listen, I will tell you something. I've been trying to use media to raise awareness about medical stuff and mental health issues.
Yeah, you're doing
for 30
a great
years.
Job of that.
I've never seen anything like this. Not just in terms of everybody wanting to talk about it, but suddenly people going, "Hey, by the way, I had a major. I was depressed." Let's talk about it. I'll tell you about my depression. And we had a guy on my radio show last night, on my television show last night, suddenly go, "Yeah, I was severely depressed. I was doing drugs and got some treatment. I feel great now." But man, he had never spoken about it before to anybody, publicly.
Why is that?
He's given his
depression is such a...
It's a stigma. I talk about my shit all the time. I've got generalized anxiety disorder. Mm-hmm. I've got exercise bulimia. I had panic attacks when I was depressed in college. And man, was I depressed in college.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
Yeah.
It blows to have brain stuff going on.
And you don't want to talk about it because what? It seems like something's wrong with you, right?
No, I talk about it all the time. I don't care.
But I'm saying to you, but like most people.
I guess people feel stigma. Yeah.
Is it almost associated with a sign of weakness, do you think?
A weakness or there's something wrong with the personhood.
Which is totally false.
Which is totally false. I mean, there can be stuff wrong with the person, and that is a brain phenomenon too. But that manifests in how you behave and how you treat people and things like that.
Wait, so how did you said you had some depressive...
I was totally mismanaged too. That's, I think, what got me involved in particularly treating young adults and adolescents and educating them because... Oh my God, was I mismanaged, and I suffered for a couple of years.
Mismanaged, what do you mean?
They're just horrible. First thing happened to me... was I went to the medical doctor at the hospital, at the college, and he goes, you need to get your shit together. Take some long walks in the woods or something and start playing tennis. You know, I'm like,
okay.
How happy that would make you if I could even just go do that, let alone have that change my affects.
Yeah.
And I was sort of bewildered and shocked and felt ashamed. And then I felt like there was something wrong with me. Like, well, I'll try to go do that. Like, that did shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then people did start giving me medication, wrong medicine. And so, come on.
Wow. And geez.
I had lots of. And then I had, by the way, then I eventually went to therapy years later. And I did therapy for a decade.
Would you?
Oh, it was awesome. Best thing I ever did. But I did it. I don't think it's for everybody what I did. What I did was, a very, very complete sort of course. So it was almost an education in a way of clearing certain things I needed to clear up to be able to do my work and stuff.
But therapy, do you think it is a necessity for people who are even having a smidgen of depressive behavior?
Well, I do. Now, I'm not saying you have to do that, but in terms of outcome studies... If you have a diagnosed depression, you're more likely to have a full remission if it's some psychiatric treatment, some kind of biological treatment, and therapy.
Wow. And if you're afraid of the biological treatment, fine, get the therapy. Go.
I think the stigma with therapy is that, well, it's just someone talking to me. How is that going to get me better?
Or they go, no, I'm not going to listen to somebody else tell me how to live my life.
Sure.
No. Right. And by the way, a good therapist doesn't even say anything.
Sure.
Yeah.
They just sit there and listen.
Yeah.
They just let you go. Attune their body to your body. It's being in the presence of another highly empathically.
Yeah. What is it about
individual.
That you just?
It's brains heal brains. Or bodies heal bodies, really.
So crazy.
And people lose track. You know, we've been talking about brain disease here, but the reality is when it comes to psychology and interpersonal interactions, that's bodily. That's two bodies being close. That's our autonomic nervous system tuning to each other.
Yeah.
That's magic. That's really interesting stuff.
Now,
that's another topic, another day.
Of course. Yeah.
Writing a book on that, by the way.
Are you really?
The editor has it, so it may come out.
Do you want any personal stories from when I went to divorce counseling as a child for that? And how that's the only type of therapy I've ever been involved with.
Couples therapy is different.
But no, it was me.
Oh, you.
Just me.
How old were you?
10. And it was this heavyset dude with a beard who had a mini basketball hoop on his door. And every time I would want to shoot hoops and not talk to him and finally be like, he's like, so how do you feel about your dad not fucking your mom anymore? No, he wouldn't say that. But, but he was just like, how do you feel about everything that's going on? And I just was like, why am I going to talk to you, man? I just met you 10 seconds ago.
As a 10-year-old. He didn't play basketball with you for a while.
No, well, he let me shoot on his hoop. And then he would finally go, you can't shoot until you talk to me about this. But I would sit there quietly. Quietly, my mom would be like, he says you're not talking to him. I was like, Mom, why am I going to talk to this
guy? Movie Antoine Fisher?
Yes.
Remember what he did there?
Yes.
He made the guy sit in his office for months?
Yeah.
Wow. That to me was a genius move and a genius rendition of how these things work. Now, if you're working with a young adolescent killer, he should have gone outside and played basketball with you.
Really?
You work alongside.
Yeah.
You don't look face-to-face for young males is threatening.
But, you know, that's turned me off from even because I've thought about – I've had some down days. This business is obviously down days, but I've always bottled up so much of that stuff and been like, yo, just get over this. Tomorrow's a new day.
Well, you can.
I've never opened myself.
Let's sort of distinguish between a psychological state and a medical problem.
Yeah.
You know, if you have 2 weeks of unrelenting, let's list
the
you have energy, no energy. You have shame and guilt and no ability to enjoy things and no hope for the future. And you may or may not be sad. Sadness isn't always even part of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But you may feel anxious. You may have panic attacks. You may be irritable. You may feel you can't eat or you want to eat too much. You may want to sleep too much or you can't sleep at all.
I've maybe had 2 days in a row of stuff like that.
Everyone's had some of that. The hallmark is early awakening. You go to sleep, but you wake up 3 hours later and you can't go back to sleep. That's the hallmark of depression. And if you have some combination of these things go into more than a couple of weeks, well, that's something to look into. And to get back to what we were talking about earlier, the first order of business is getting a thorough medical exam, because that could be thyroid disease, it could be a tumor somewhere, it could be a million things. And we need to rule those things out first, then look at the brain.
Or getting Phil Collins' Greatest Hits CD, because every track on that album makes you feel good.
That's absolutely true.
I like Fart Barf.
I just found out about them.
They're awesome.
By the way, greatest name for a band of all time.
That's real?
Fart Barf?
Oh, they're awesome.
I got to look them up now.
And they wear primate masks. Yeah. Never see their face.
They performed at the Improv.
Yes, they did.
I'll have to go see them.
Did you go to that?
Yes, I did.
Wow. He's living a way better life than the outside of Frank. If people are listening to this and they have a friend that they think is severely depressed, has gone through some trauma in their past, but they're not addressing it. They're saying, I don't need therapy. How are ways that you can kind of guide people in the right direction?
You just got to get them in the office somehow. And I think the important thing is, the thing I always say is keep your eyes on them. Don't let them isolate.
Right.
And if you think that there's a real chance that they could be intending self-harm or even contemplating it or start giving stuff away and he really worries you call the cops or you call a hospital. You get them, have them taken.
Isn't that so much easier said than done?
I know it is. Right? Listen, and when I say stuff like that all the time, people rarely do it, and they're dead people because they don't.
Yeah. Now, if you call the cops and say, hey, my friend is showing signs of suicide, what do they do?
They come put them on, then talk to them. You can get also a PET team, psychiatric emergency team, and they will come do an evaluation and put them on a hold, take them against their will.
And
3 days, things pass.
And for people out there,
and by the way, then they get engaged in treatment oftentimes.
Yeah, right. And for some people, they think like, oh, well, what if they hate me for doing that? Well, but then if you don't do anything, what are the other consequences?
You can't worry about that. You're saving somebody's life. It happens a lot with addiction where people are really on the edge. And I say, look, throw them in the car or call the cop. The only person that did exactly what I said was Johnny Knoxville. Okay. I said, dude, you have tied Steve up a million times. Mm-hmm. Get some duct tape, tie him up, throw him in the trunk, take him to the hospital. Here's the hospital I want him to go to. And just go to the emergency room and tell him this guy was going to drive his motorcycle off the building, and he's manic and he's crazy, and they'll
save his life.
Johnny Knoxville saved his life in that moment because he had this email thread where he was describing what he was going to do. You got to find that somewhere.
No shit.
We were all like, oh my God, any second now, this is done. And then Johnny called me. I was like, dude, go get him. This my truck. What was that?
and now Steve-O's doing amazing.
My God, Steve-O is the rare that people go through the kind of massive transformation.
He seems so
full.
Mellow.
That's what I call a full recovery.
Yeah,
the full recovery. Yeah, all respect.
He was able to talk pretty like when he did our podcast. He was able to talk. First of all, he was just so calm, and I was like, man, this is.
I believe it's the same guy.
Yeah. But he was able to talk so candidly and articulately about like that that version of himself.
Yeah, no,
like,
he has full insight. He knows what he's doing. He knows he could go back.
Now, with suicide, like they were talking about, like there was one issue that got blown up is why he didn't leave a note or anything like that. And
what I was telling you about the suddenness of this thing.
That's why it wasn't a thing that he thought out for a long time.
That's why you know this wasn't something brewing for a while that people could have anticipated quite this way. It was like, oh. Fuck this.
Because there's no note, we have no further insight into why he did it. But I guess
the circumstance tells me all I need to know. And I think the autopsy will inform us more than anything. I keep saying it's a medical problem.
Does anything say anything in terms of there's a report that came out that he initially tried to slash his wrists, failed?
It's just that desperation. I gotta get out of this. I can't stand
it. And is the fix it? That's like the quickest way to.
But when people do that hanging without a note and stuff, that's that moment. That's that, you know, I've seen it both people that struggle for a long, 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 long time, and then all of a sudden, wham, they do it. And I've seen it in people who, out of the blue, just do that.
Wow. I mean, in no time when they're taking the belt off and setting things up.
They're not in the right head. They're not, the brain is disordered.
Wow.
It's like the drug addict grabbing the heroin, you know, knowing whatever.
And the only thing to do have broken him off that path of thinking would have been some sort of
somebody sitting on him. Somebody acts, you know, but for the grace of God, walking in and going,
to interrupt
Jesus,
that thought process.
You got to sit on him. Not just, you would have taken him to the hospital, put him in a locked door, and don't talk to him.
Do you think he was even showing signs of because he was with his wife the night prior, or the day prior.
I'm sure he was depressed.
She's probably looking back at trying to find now, like, moments where she should have.
I'm certain he was depressed, but the way people are talking about it, sounds like he was depressed, but not suicidal. He was not that depressed.
Now, what does that mean? I mean,
and by the way, suicidality can be a prominent symptom. Some people, there's a genetic component to suicidality too. Some people, it's a prominent feature of their depression. Some people never get it with their depression. Some people have it with limited depression, and some people only with the most severe depressions. It has different. It's a symptom, and it has different circumstances in which it develops.
You're saying depressive but not suicidal. So at what point of the depressive state should you be like honing in, being like, all right, there's a possibility of the...
Well, when they can't function, you got to get them somewhere. I mean, if they're losing weight, they can't eat, they you know, can't sleep, and they can't go to work, or they can't...
Days in
they're
bed.
Irritable, they're agitated. So
people around him who are like, yeah, he seems pretty down, but he's not going to do it, but we don't need to step in yet.
Unfortunately, you're allowed to do drugs until you die, you're allowed to be depressed, and there's no way to force people into treatment, and I guess that's okay. But
and the suicide prevention hotline, have you seen
excellent
work?
Yeah, active listening works. Any non-isolation, any contact... Brains heal other brains. And if you can get in contact with a brain that's available, you know, listens, you're better. You get better. Wow. It may not remit the whole process. I mean, you need sort of a medical management, but by medical, I mean professional. I mean, a psychologist or a psychiatrist or both, preferably. And getting people in, you know, and then the other part of this is two other big important points. Yeah. One is, you know, in spite of best efforts, just like trying to treat cancer or heart disease, these are fatal. Fatal conditions, and you, in spite of good treatment, best efforts, people die. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of the condition. Number one, number two. My other concern is when celebrities get special treatment.
Yeah,
you know, TMZ reported that he was seeing a spiritual guide or something. Mm. If that's true, those people never take responsibility for what they did. They are never called to task, And whenever you get special treatment because you're a celebrity, because you don't want to do the real treatment,
right.
Standard of care is a standard of care because it's the best.
Yeah.
That's why it's the standard of care. As soon as you move away from the standard of care, it's, who knows?
Right.
And if you're a celebrity, you typically get sycophantic, special care that's shitty. And you, so bad things happen.
So if a guy's
standard,
yeah.
if the spiritual outcomes were the way to go, I mean, I have a spiritual component that I advise to patients that they follow. But if a spiritual guide was necessary, well, we would have
that's,
it.
Yeah, that's what we would do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, or if that were the only thing that was necessary, that's what we do. There's zero evidence that these people, it's a medical problem.
Yeah.
It'd be like me, you know, shaking a, throwing a the tiki in the volcano, you know, and saying, well, that's it. You're done. Right. You're cured. It's like, well.
So basically, if we can sort of summarize, is get help, search help, seek help. And
don't give up. Don't give up.
And then don't be afraid of it.
Don't be afraid of it. Don't stigmatize it. Don't blame the person. Don't be angry with the person. Don't be angry with yourself. It's a medical problem. You would think to yourself, what would this be if they were complaining about chest pain? Or they were vomiting, or they were, or they had a knee pain.
Yeah.
What would you do differently? Why do we treat the brain differently?
I see a lot of people that they say it's such a selfish act.
Yeah, that's the other thing that's going around. And here's the thing about it: two things about selfish. A, I challenge anybody in severe pain not to be thinking about themselves. If I cut your arm off, you're going to behave rather selfishly.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that mostly.
Maybe? Okay.
You're going to be thinking about what I'm going to have for dinner.
The pain that the brain is perceiving in depression is very similar to that kind of pain. Mm-hmm. There's an area called the insular cortex that gives the charge of pain, and that's firing off like crazy when people are depressed. So they are in misery. The misery component is so overwhelming. They can't think about anything but themselves.
Thinking about their kids or their
career. They can't. They're trying to survive the moment in the pain. And then number two, they start feeling they're a burden to their loved ones. They'll be better off without me.
For real?
Oh, routinely. That's how they think.
Well, that seems like reason enough to just then
you
pull
what
the
do
plug.
You say? Why are you alive? Why are you alive?
Yeah.
Lastly, real quick. So, just because again, you said it's more disease than the you think the business contributing to all this.
Yeah.
But for like Brad and I,
you're screwed.
Okay, well, there
you go.
We've
known that for a long time.
Well, listen and subscribe and rate to the podcast now, people. Who knows? Right?
Yeah, who knows how long it'll be around. So.
Yeah.
But I mean,
can I fill in for Adam?
I guess you're going first, apparently.
If I didn't end it during my career at Universal Studios, and I think I'm okay. Because that seems walking around, looking at myself in the mirror with giant fake sideburns and a fake ab chest and heavyset Latino women being nice. Like, oh, Wolverine, you want to come home? Like, if that wasn't reason enough for me to pull it.
Oh, God.
Well, thanks for taking time.
My pleasure. It's important, and here we are. You know, this got you guys out to go talk about it, and I think that's great.
It's opened a lot of people's eyes, and definitely made Brendan more sensitive to just a lot of the issues concerning like pain and just and being depressed and trying to open our eyes to people around us. Because I mean,
paying attention when someone says
we are around. I mean, I can already think of four people, one specifically who's made some attempts and I've talked
previous attempts.
I've talked to her and I've already reached out since this.
Good. Previous attempts predict future attempts. So really, I mean, middle-aged males, you know, really likely to complete a suicide.
Do people who have attempted and see something like that, does that make them more like, Robin Williams feels my pain?
There are, interestingly, what seems to be happening is people are feeling a sense of relief rather than copycat. That's what I'm seeing.
Okay.
Hard to predict which way it's going to go. Mm-hmm. I talked to Jeffrey Lieberman yesterday, who's the head of the American Psychiatric Association. He's a professor at Columbia University Medical School, and he said, you know, poor Robin Williams, if you wrote out, you know, what his conditions were, he was a marked man for suicide. Chest surgery, cardiac disease, addiction, history of depression, white male, late middle age. That adds up to likely suicide.
Wow.
And then I'm telling you there's going to be something else. I just know it. There's going to be some other thing here. Either in medication or something, or a medical problem. This autopsy will be what informs why the sudden massive mess.
Wow. It's definitely a horrible thing, but it's the one silver lining is that it does bring more awareness.
He's given us a gift. It's
now
tragic.
We're talking
he's given
about
us a
it.
Gift. Absolutely.
We got. I mean, I'm just grateful that we got him for as long as we did.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? The amount of body of work, and you have to look at it like that. Thanks for taking time.
Okay, you bet.
Next time we'll talk about
something.
By the
way, my wife says thank you for doing her podcast, Calling Out with Susan Pinsky.
Oh.
Be sure to mention it to
Can I do it or can she
done
do
and done, Adam. Come
it's going to happen.
Next time we'll talk about something more positive, like when will the Spice Girls get back together? Thanks, Drew.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.